Gary Pippin, and do we have a show for you today. A master showman and a man who is well known for his frequent TV appearances over the past few decades, the one and only Kenny Kingston, the mystic for the stars. Kenny has several books out, including Making Your Goals a Reality, Psychic Kenny Kingston's Guide to Health and Happiness. So let's get the show underway. Kenny Kingston, welcome to the show. It's great to talk to you. How are things out there in Hollywood? I think we probably better start off with the subject of Mae West. You had a special relationship with her, I think. And Mae West was quite a psychic, according to you.
Well, Mae West was my mother's best friend. And Mae West, when I was about 7, 8, 9 years old, she taught me what I do a lot with private readings. When people cannot come to California, or they don't want to come to California, or whatever reason, then I do a reading over the telephone. And Mae West taught me to do clairaudio. That's when you listen to the sound of a voice and tell them about their past, their present, and their future.
So Mae West was psychic?
Oh, my God. Jerry, sweet spirit, she was under contract to Paramount. And Zucker called her into his office one day, and he said, Mae, I'm sorry to tell you this, but he said, we're going bankrupt. Not because of your films. Your films are really making money. But we don't have another Mae West film ready to shoot. He said, how long would it take you to write another? Because she wrote all her screenplays.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. She wrote all her plays that she did on Broadway. And she did them, wrote them, while she was in trance. So she said, well, she didn't know probably.
You said in trance, so in other words, she's a kind of a psychic writing.
Yes, you're right. She would go to the other side have a secretary, they call them stenographers, of course, in those days. And so Mae promised Zucker that she would go back to the Ravenswood she would write a screenplay for him. So indeed she did. She went back to the hotel apartment where she later bought the whole block. But anyway, she went back and wrote, and he brought the screenplay back to Zucker in about 3 weeks. And he read it while she was there, you know, breezed through it. He said, my God, Mae, we've got a hit on this. It's called She Done Him Wrong. Mm-hmm. And they decided to start shooting in 2 weeks. And so Mae was on her way down to her limousine with her chauffeur with her. And Zucker said, I'll see you to your car. So as they walked onto the street of the studio, there was a chap standing at the corner of the studio, and Mae said, say, who's that guy? And he said, oh, Mae, pay no attention to him. He's a big player, and we're firing him at the end of the week. She said, no, you ain't. That guy can talk. He's my leading man. And it turned out to be Cary Grant.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've really had a lot of association with a lot of the famous divas of all time. Greta Garbo, I think. Tell me a little bit about Greta.
Well, first of all, she loves to be called Miss G. Actually, I met Miss G through Gaylord Houser, the nutritionist.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have every Wednesday afternoon when he moved to Beverly Hills. He had luncheon to the top socialites with the best food, nutritional food. So he had one particular day, he got a call, and his butler said, Mr. Garbo is on the line. So the Gaylord took the call, and she, indeed it was her. And he asked her if she'd like to come to lunch in 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it was, on a Wednesday. And she said, yes, indeed she would. So there at about 11:55, there was an empty seat, and the doorbell rang, and the butler started to go to the door, and Gaylord said, no, I'll open it. And he opened it, and there she stood with the flower, gave him the flower, and they became forever friends. Mm. Then, when she was here, she always stayed at his house in Beverly Hills on Coldwater Canyon, which was approximately a 5-minute drive from my house here in Studio City. See, if I look out over my window now, I can see, over beyond my pool, I can see Hollywood, part of Beverly Hills, and then Mulholland Drive. So I used to drive up and we'd have lunch together, et cetera. We'd go out for lunch or whatever have you. And Miss G and I just became very, very close friends. And the funny thing was, that one particular day, Gaylord was going into one of the popular food chain restaurant markets. And Miss G said, I would love to go into the market. She said, but everybody will recognize me. So I said to her, Miss G, you got this beautiful Dior suit on. You're not wearing a dress. Not wearing your slacks, your customary slacks. Just take off your dark glasses, take off your hat, and let's walk in. And as soon as they start recognizing you, we will leave. So she said, all right. So we went in and we shopped for about a half hour and came out. She got in the back seat of the car, and as Gaylord got into the seat and his driver got in and started up the car, she started to cry. And I said, Miss G, what are you crying for? She said, oh, my career is finished. No one recognized me. Dark glasses, floppy hat, were all her trademarks.
Yeah, you do a good Greta Garbo impression, Kenny.
Not enough time with her.
What about Lucille Ball?
Oh, Lucille Ball, I met. I was born in Buffalo, New York, and I met Lucille Ball. Gave her a reading, actually, the first time when she and Marino Hara were on a personal appearance tour. There was a film RKO put out called Dance Girl Dance, and those days, stars, you know, went on a personal appearance tour with the film. Remember those days?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I went backstage and gave her a reading, and we became fast friends. Then, when she became so popular, we still remained friends because I came to Southern California, and she came, of course. She bought her house in Beverly Hills and did all her films and television shows. But the interesting thing was that I was in San Francisco one particular day, and as I was walking down Market Street, she hadn't done a television show at all. She had not done anything at all on television except guest appearances. And I stood in front of the theater, and I thought, you know, I've got to tell her what the spirits are telling me. So it was Lucille Ball in person, because she was, at that time, a famous movie star. And Desi Arnaz was her band leader, and she just married him. So I went backstage and chatted with her, and Desi said, Kenny, what do you have to tell me? Tell me something, Kenny. Tell me something from the spirit world. And I said, you are going to be the biggest producer in all of television. And Lucy, you're going to be one of the biggest stars television ever produced. And, of course, we reminisced about that several times on Irv Griffin and various shows that I did, you know.
Right.
Lucy would happen to be on.
You're still active out there at the Hollywood crowd. The scene has changed. But I somebody told me you've been doing something with Whoopi Goldberg, or you know her? Or?
Whoopi Goldberg, yes. What happened with Whoopi Goldberg is that I did Howie Mandel's show. But before doing the show, about a year beforehand, I predicted that she would win the Academy Award for Ghosts. That was before it was announced. So, indeed, she did win. So when I guested with her on Howie, I said, do you remember? She said, oh, yes. And I said, it was before. And she said, that's right. And I said to her, thank you. And so cute, she looked at me. She said, no, thank you.
You know, when we talk about all of these people, and you mentioned her right off the bat when we started talking, Kenny, Marilyn Monroe, still probably one of the most mystifying and electric personalities of all. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with her.
What happened, I had the big house at Pacific Heights in San Francisco, and I was doing a lot of readings. And one particular day, I got a telephone call from Clifton Webb, who was my friend from New York, long-standing. And Clifton said, Kenny, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, yes. And he said, Mrs. DiMaggio really needs a reading. She doesn't know what her life is going to be, and she wants. She just got married, and she said she really would appreciate having a reading. So when could you see her? And I remember we set the time for 9 o'clock of a particular night, and 9 o'clock came, 9:15, night when he came. And my houseboy said to me, should we turn out the lights? And I said, no, I've got another reading. So he disappeared. Presently, the doorbell rang. And if I opened the doorbell, the door. There she stood. She was wearing a black coat with a white ermine collar and a babushka. And I said, oh, my God, Marilyn. She said, yes. She stepped aside. And she said, excuse me for being late. She said, but it broke in the newspapers this morning that I was undergoing psychiatric treatment. And I didn't want your reputation spoiled. That's the kind of girl she was. She didn't want my reputation spoiled.
Do you still talk to some of these personalities?
All the time. I never use the word die because no one really does. We only really, Jerry, we only really have a new birthday because that's when life really begins. You know, so Marilyn and I were going to Peter Lawford's house on a Saturday night to a party. And Marilyn had long since divorced Joe DiMaggio. I didn't know. DiMaggio's a common San Francisco name. That's why I didn't put two and two together.
So you didn't think he was the baseball player?
No, because, you know, it's a common name. So now years have passed, and Marilyn and I still remain great friends. And she's going to buy a house in Brentwood, and she asked me to go out and see what the vibrations were. And I said, Marilyn, this house, it's not for you. It's very gloomy, and et cetera. It's just not. Anyway, Marilyn decided she fell in love with it, and she bought it. And one particular night, she called me. She said, tomorrow I want to go to the beach. She said, will you go with me? I said, I can't, Marilyn. I've got private readings all afternoon. And she said, well, I'm going to go. So she called me that evening, early that evening, and she was elated. She was absolutely ecstatic. No one recognized her. She played with children. She loved children. Never had them, but loved them. And she said, you know, Kenny, I think what I'm going to do is not go to the party Saturday night at Peter's. She said, so if you'll forgive me, I said, then I won't go either. And she said, all right. She said, we'll just go to bed early, et cetera. Not together, but we'll go to bed early. And
well, let's do
well.
That.
So, very, very well. Anyway, she said she was going to go to bed because she was going to hold a major, major, major press conference on Monday. Now, the world and the press, Jerry, thought that she was going to announce that she was having an affair with Bobby Kennedy. But that wasn't what she was going to announce at all. She was going to announce that Thursday she was going to remarry Joe DiMaggio.
Really?
Yeah. And Joe had his clothes all ready, and Marilyn had the flowers all ordered. So the flowers and Joe's clothes went to Marilyn's funeral, unfortunately, instead of a wedding.
What do you make of that death? Still a lot of mystery around it.
No, there's no mystery, really. What she did was she took a little too much of a barbiturate and just a little too much alcohol. That's really all it was. Nothing to do with murder. It's just like when I was in London not too long ago. I go to London quite frequently. And everybody, I was on the morning show, which I do their morning show there, Jerry.
Yeah.
Which is, as you know, the biggest show in London. And when I came off the air, I was on the whole hour. People were just calling in and calling in and calling in, asking naturally about Diana, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, no. I've been through the Alma Tunnel on any number of occasions, and it was an accident. Trust me, it was an accident. So Valerie and I went to Harrods.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as we were going through, we were going to have breakfast, and a man walked up to me, and he said to me, Mr. Al-Fayed, we'd really like to meet with you. We enjoyed the show this morning very much. I said, great. He said, I am going to be in the store very long. And I said, well, what I'm going to do is have breakfast, and I'm going to do some shopping. He said, fine. Then he'll find you. So a couple of hours later, as Valerie and I were leaving, he came up and he said, oh, I'm sorry. He said, but he can't meet with you this morning. I said, oh, I understand. And he said, why do you understand? I said, because I said that it was an accident. He really wanted me to say it was a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, that isn't the reason. I said, all right, you have your reasons, Spirit has their reasons.
You know, you're talking about doing television shows and radio shows. It might have been one of those Merv Griffin shows years ago. I think you told him you didn't believe there is such a thing as death.
Oh, no. Absolutely. There is no such thing as death. When you pass over, you only go into another dimension. And you meet with your loved ones. Now, for instance, now, Mae West is one of the greeters on the other side.
Really?
Yeah, and so is Princess Diana. She, an interesting thing, Princess Diana was greeted on the other side by all people in the world, the Duchess of Windsor. And now you're going to say, why? Because they both had the same experience. Now, the greatest thrill of my life was when I became the psychic to the Duchess. I'll tell you about that later if you want. But when she went to the other side, Princess Diana, the reason Wally greeted her was because, remember, when she married David, she was not given a royal title. She was given the title Her Highness and His Royal Highness. And when Diana divorced Prince Charles, she was stripped of her title.
Now, when you talk about people like Mae West and Princess Diana and these famous people on the other side, what are we talking about exactly? I mean, is this a park or a nice place or a different dimension or what?
It's a greeting area, you know? Like, it could be a lovely home. It could be, as you say, a park. It could be any place. I don't think the location is as important as the person meeting you who is going to eventually take you to your loved one who you adored when they were alive.
I just don't quite grasp the whole thing there, Kenny, but you'll have to forgive me for that. But what you just stay in this area of a limbo or what?
You go over and you do the same thing. Like, for instance, right now, what they're doing for a seance that we held for Diana on the anniversary of her passing away, we found out that she's guarding on the other side, but of all people, naturally, with Wally, but of all people, the threesome, the other one is Queen Mom.
Oh, really?
Queen Mom, you know. She thoroughly despised.
I started to say, how are they getting along?
She thoroughly despised Wallace Warfield Simpson, because remember, when she took David off the throne, it caused George to become king. And he wasn't well, and that hurried his death, or his passing, according to Her Royal Highness.
Someone, I think in your book, you refer to visiting with Elvis Presley on the other side?
Yes, I'll tell you what happened there. I was in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, which I used to go up quite frequently to do the Tommy Banks show. And Tommy always had the cast of one show meet the cast of the show that just finished. In other words, if we would arrive now, we would have dinner tonight with the cast that just finished taping a show that afternoon or doing the show live, however it was. And the person I met was Dottie West. You know, the West
singer.
Sure,
yeah. Good-looking woman.
Yes. And during the course of conversation, Dottie said to me, you know, who would really love to meet you and have a reading. And I said, who? And she said, Elvis Presley. And I said, well, my God, all he has to do is to ring me up, and my secretary will be glad to make an appointment with him, and we'll see him for a private reading. And she said, I don't think he would call you. Will you call him for the reading? I said, no, Dottie, that's one thing that I cannot do. I have a strict rule to that. It's because you don't call, a doctor doesn't call you and say to you, I think you should come in and see me. You call the doctor when you need the doctor. I said, so he has to put his best foot forward, and I'll be glad to make the appointment. So he never did. So finally, one particular time, I went into Vegas, and I used to go to the hotel that he played at all the time there. It's in my book anyway. I won't come through here. But I went to the hotel, and every time I planned on seeing him, floor show, something happened, and I didn't get to see it. So this one particular time, I made it, and as we walked in, the show was just starting. We walked on the stage. Jerry, I couldn't stay. His aura was so dark, that immediately I knew something was happening to this man. I just knew it. I couldn't stay and witness this, and I couldn't go backstage and tell him, because after all, he used to do things like that. But later on, when he did pass away, the first person to come to me was his mother, Gladys. Now, she brought him onto the other side. And you've got to be careful, because people can bring us to the other side, because they're over there, and they're lonely. And Elvis was very lonely, too. Even Dottie admitted that. So he's over there on the other side, and when we did have a seance for him, he's studying holistic medicine, which I've told Priscilla on any number of times. She says, "Is he still studying?" "Yes, he's still studying holistic medicine. He wants to, because he abused his body so badly. He just wants to make up for it now."
When you see people in things like what you felt about Elvis was going to happen, it might happen. I imagine that you sense that a lot, don't you,
yes,
about people?
Yes, well, I'll give you an idea that my mom and I were taking my cousin to the airport in San Francisco because he was in the diplomatic corps and he was going to Germany. And we got there early because it was an international flight. And we were in the bar. And his, it just so happened he was seated back to the clock. And I thought, I've got to see this crowd. He said to me, "Kenny, go and see if the plane is going to be on time." So as I walked into the waiting room where the passengers were waiting, Jerry, not one person had an aura. Not one person had an aura. That means goodbye. They're on their way onto the other side. So, naturally, I hadn't done television, and my face wasn't as well known as it is now. But I walked up to the clerk, and I said, "This plane can't take off. There's going to be a catastrophe." He said, "What?" I said, "The plane cannot take off. There's going to be a catastrophe." He said, "What are you talking about? Where have you been?" I said, "In the bar." He said, "Go back to the bar." So, I tried every way possible my cousin had taken the flight, but he took it, and the plane crashed.
Has that happened to you before? Similar incidents?
Trips are most important, not marrying a certain person. Don't marry that person, or it'll be hell on earth.
So you can tell that right away?
Oh, yeah. If somebody comes to
you, my couple of wives, I should have introduced you to them.
That's right. I think the most important person taking this very seriously who I had as a client was Howard Hughes. That was the one that...
Well, tell me a little bit about Howard Hughes.
Well, at the Roosevelt Hotel, I used to go regularly to a girl by the name of Ruth for a manicure. And we used to get my hair done by Shirley. His last name was Shirley. He would, trim the hair, etc. And Ruth would give me the manicure. So this one particular day, she was giving a manicure to this man, and she said, we started talking about the psychic world, what have you, and he said, "May I have your card?" So I gave him my card. I didn't know who he was. I gave him my card, and out of the clear blue sky, she said, "Are your nails short enough, Mr. Hughes?" And with this, he pulled his hand back. He said, "What do I owe you?" She said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me, I'm sorry." He said, "All right, I told you." And he left, paid her and left. I said, "What was that all about?" He said, "That was Howard Hughes." And he told me never, never, never to use his name, to say sir or whatever you want to call me, but never call me Howard or Hughes. He just was, that type of an individual. So later on, he called, and he came up for a private reading, and I was going to go one time to Mexico City, and he said, "Please be my guest at the, when you're in Acapulco, at the El Presidente, because he owns the El Presidente." And the interesting thing about Howard Hughes is, do you remember James Bacon?
Yes.
Sure, the columnist. Well, Bacon and I are buddies, and Bacon was always writing about Howard. He was a ago and writing about myself. And I was going to Vegas, and he said, do me a favor, go over to the DI and see what you can pick up on Howard Hughes, because he owned the hotel, if you remember. It was a recluse in the hotel.
Right, he was up on the top floor.
Right, right. So, as I went in about, I don't know, 12:30, 1 o'clock, after the second show was over, Jack Benny was walking around through the casino because Mary Livingston was playing roulette. And he came over to me and he said to me, what are you doing? He said, what spirit are you talking to tonight? He said, I think you're as fruity as a...
Yeah.
You don't mean it. He said, no, I don't mean it. He said, but you're strange. He said, now who are you waiting for? Tell me. And he was packing his mouth with gum. He took one stick of gum after the other. And I said, I'm waiting for Jimmy Walker. He said, what Jimmy Walker? I said, don't you remember? He used to be the mayor of New York. He said, yes, but he's dead. So I said, you know my spiel on this. Don't go through it again with me. I said, okay. He said,
did you pick up something about Howard Hughes while you were there?
Yeah, I knew Jimmy Walker was in the suite. I asked Jimmy Walker to go up to the suite. So he came down, and he said to me, Kenny, he said, Howard Hughes is back, and he's going to leave. And he gave a date in November, like we're now near Thanksgiving. He said, he's going to leave November such and such date, like the 29th or whatever it was. I forget it in one of my books. But he said he's going to leave. And he said, the world will not learn about it until December the 2nd. That's when the world will learn that he's gone to the Bahamas. So I called Bacon. No. Jack said, come on, it's the first time in my life I'll pay for a call for you. You can call Jim Bacon. So I woke Bacon up. And he said, okay, what now? Who will you talk to today? And I told him and gave the story. He printed it a couple days later. And sure, God's above, he went to the Bahamas, just as Spirit said. Nobody knew about it until December 2nd.
We could talk for hours, and we'll have to do it again, Kenny. But I can't let you go here without asking you. You mentioned your house there in Studio City, but does it? Are the walls made out of glass, literally?
Yeah. Oh, the walls. The walls are all you know.
Glass-walled home is what your publicist said.
Yeah, the den is made glassed in. The living room is glassed in, and the bedrooms are mostly glass. I guess so. But not the front of the house.
Well, sure, I understand that part. But
house has a facade.
And you have some sort of a jeweled throne chair there from Broadway? Clifton Webb, you mentioned him earlier. Did that belong to him or something?
Yes. When you come, you must come, because there is... When I was... Yes, the throne chair was a gift from Clifton Webb many, many, many years ago. He had a throne chair that had belonged, I believe, belonged originally to Sir Laurence Olivier. But anyway, there it is in the den. Also, there's zillions of memorabilia, gifts from Garbo, gifts from Elvis, and of course, Flip Wilson gave me so many gifts during our long time.
Now, Kenny, is it possible for somebody to get an appointment with you? Do you still do readings?
Oh, sure, I do readings.
So, I mean, we're heard around the world. So somebody could actually call the office there and probably make an appointment or something? I mean, do you have to take a... How do you qualify to get a reading with you?
Just have $500.
Well, that's simple.
Or they can get an aura reading. I'll tell you what people can do. People can just go on to PennyKingston.org, and all that information is right there, and my books are right there. How much the prices are, and it tells you about how you send me a photograph, and we send you a copy back of what your aura reading is.
You can tell that by a photograph.
Oh, yes, by a photograph, absolutely.
Kenny, we'll do it again.
Well, let's do it again.
Okay, I've been...
By the way, the aura readings are only $15.
Yeah, you're right. I wanted to mention that.
Gary, did you know Steve Wynn?
Not personally, but...
Steve Wynn passed a remark on Charlie Rose one night. He said, I would give my entire empire, I'd give all the hotels, I'd give everything I have, if I knew, and I'm not asking for anything from him, but If I knew that my mother was all right on the other side, I would do anything to find out. So I've never bothered to ring him up or anything, because I don't go to Vegas that often. I used to with Flip. You know, Flip Wilson was my unauthorized manager for years.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a very good friend that was a very good friend with Steve Wynn's mother. And maybe I can get the word to Steve.
Well, I'd like to. All I want to do is to let him, because he looked so sad when he said to Charlie Rose, I would do anything if I could get in touch with my mother.
I'll make that a project and I'll get back with
you. Okay. You got it.
Okay. I'd say in a couple of weeks.
All right, sweet spirit.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, Kenny.